Well, hello everyone. Welcome. Can you all hear me? Good. This is the subject talk about the mathematics and economics and the mathematics with economics programs. I will tell you a little bit about me by way of introduction, and then I want to talk to you about why you might consider studying a mathematics-based degree at all. Tell you something about what it's like to study mathematics at university, because it's quite different in some ways from what you might anticipate. I'll then talk specifically about mathematics at LSE, because that's different from mathematics at many other universities. Everything at LSE is different in many ways from other things at other universities, as I'm sure you'll gather. I'll tell you a little bit about our department. These programs are joint degrees with the Department of Economics, but they're administered, run by the Mathematics Department, as are all joint economics programs. They're run by the partner departments. I'll tell you a little bit in some detail, but not too much, about the programs, the structure of them, what's in them, and a little bit about the courses, especially the first year courses, because that's, of course, what would be foremost in your mind. I'll say a little bit about being a student here at the LSE, although I'm sure you'll pick that up from the other talks that you go to today and from the information stands that you'll see during the day. I'll say a very brief piece about applying. The focus of my talk is not about how to apply or get into the degrees. It's about what the degrees are. There are talks and information elsewhere today about the process of application to LSE. And then there'll be time at the end for questions and answers. And also, I hope if you don't feel that you are comfortable asking a question in front of everybody, there'll be time at the end for individual questions once we've finished. Okay, so let me start by introducing myself. My name is Martin Anthony. I'm the current head of mathematics here at LSE, and I've been at LSE for a long time. My history is rather boring. I did a maths degree at Glasgow. I did a maths PhD at London. I got a lecturing job at the LSE in 1990, and I've been here ever since. On the way, I got promoted and also did an education degree. So that's my story. My teaching has been wide and varied. For a number of years, I taught the big first-year abstract mathematics course in this very lecture theatre, but I've taught other things as well, from first-year courses up to third-year and graduate courses. My research is concerned with how we can use mathematics to learn from big data sets, so machine learning, artificial intelligence, those sorts of things. So that's me. And I want, obviously, not to ask who you are, but that would take too long. But if we just have some indication of where you're from and what you're interested in. So who's here from outside London? Okay, welcome. Who's here with a primary interest, they think, in... Well, I'll tell you more about the degrees, but, you know, we've got two programs here. We've got a 50-50 program, maths and economics, and a 75% maths program, maths with economics. Now, one thing I want to stress is that if you're thinking about applying for either of these degrees, the decision about which one to apply for is not a decision you need to make, because they are both essentially the same degree that branches after the first year. So I'll emphasize that point later. Why would you want to do mathematics at university? Well, I mean, you wouldn't be here if you weren't interested in maths already, so there must be some reasons for that. So it's a subject you already know, a subject you already know that you like, and you already know that you're good at. So that's a start. It's a very intellectually stimulating subject. It's coherent, it hangs together well, it's logical, and it's beautiful. Okay? It has interesting applications, lots of them. Now, not all of them you would study here at LSE. We won't be teaching you anything about fluid mechanics or anything like that. But we will be teaching you about the sort of maths that you would use in finance and economic theory. And I'll say a little bit more about that later. It's enjoyable and satisfying. The nice thing I find, anyway, about maths is that you can obtain a solution. And you know it's correct, and that's very satisfying. Might not be easy to get the solution, but once you've got it, it's very satisfying, and it's a done deal. Some people like that. Some people don't. Some people like subjects that are where there are no right or wrong answers and there's endless debate. But if you're like me, you like to have answers. And you like to know that you found an answer. So from that point of view, it's quite satisfying. It's also intellectually satisfying because mathematics, when it's developed at university level, becomes really a sort of lovely, coherent theory in which things hang together. And you don't just do calculations or solve problems by applying a method. You go more deeply than that. You understand why the methods work and what really underpins why they work. And that's very coherent, very satisfying. You feel that you really understand. So it's a subject in which you can actually get quite deep understanding, even at undergraduate level. It's also a highly respected subject to study. Maths is seen as a pretty serious subject. You know, nobody would ever describe a maths degree as a Mickey Mouse degree. It's serious stuff, hard. At least that's what people who aren't good at it think. Those of us who are good at maths realize it's actually quite easy. And if you're good at it, it makes for an easy life because you don't have to read tons and tons of books. You just have to know what you're doing and do it. It leads, this is a subsidiary reason, of course, but it leads to interesting and well-paid jobs. Now, I'll say a little bit more about that later. Okay, so those are the reasons why you might want to study mathematics generally, and I'm sure there are others. Before we go on to the real reasons why you should study maths, let's dispense, first of all, with this employability reason. I know it's a consideration, but it shouldn't be the main one, okay? So let me say a little bit about employability of mathematics graduates. Well, they do pretty well. They have among the lowest levels of unemployment among graduates. They also tend to have higher than average salaries. And figures vary, but I think the average starting salary of our graduates is around about 30K, which means you start to pay back your loans straight away. Hey. So what do the careers agencies say about employability? Well, Prospects describes what you get from a maths degree as follows. It says, first of all, it gives you specific knowledge, which, of course, is important. So you learn specific techniques, such as statistical analysis or data handling. But, and this is more important, it gives you problem-solving skills. Now, what you really get from maths degrees are those higher-level skills, the ability to solve problems, to think logically, analytically, quantitatively, not to be afraid of numbers or information, to be able to organize things and to grapple with a problem and work out which details of the problem are extraneous and which actually matter. So the skills that you develop over several years as a mathematics-based undergraduate are those of analytical problem-solving. And that's a very higher-order skill. That's not vocational. It's not techniques that may go out of date. It's a way of thinking. Okay, and that's what makes maths graduates, I would imagine, attractive to employers. They think, here's somebody who's maths graduate, that means that they're good at thinking straight and solving problems analytically. Okay? They're not just coming in with a toolbox of techniques that they've learned that I'll have to tell them they can't use anymore because things have moved on and we need to retrain them. Okay? So, heavily vocational degree, it's not in that sense, but it gives you lifelong, brain-changing skills. Okay? So, that's why employers probably like maths graduates. But also, when you're thinking about employability, bear in mind that most vacancies, or many vacancies, don't ask for specific degree subjects. They want good students with good degrees and higher order skills. So that means that graduates with good degrees, so high class of degrees, in quantitative subjects from good universities are in demand because these are seen as bright people who can handle problem solving and data, and they, you know, have worked hard and got a good degree. So For example, I mean, if you wanted to be an accountant, you don't need to do a degree in accounting to become an accountant. I mean, you know, you might get some advantages from doing so because you might get some exemption from professional examinations and so on. But no serious accounting firm is going to look at a maths graduate and say, well, you didn't study any accounting, sorry. It's just not going to happen. They're going to look at a maths graduate and say, this is somebody who's done a hard degree in a, you know, analytical quantitative subject that they've done well. So that's the kind of person I want. So our own graduates go on to wide and varied careers, but as you would probably expect, most of them, I think it's still most, but certainly many, go into sort of finance-related professions. They're doing a joint degree with maths and economics. They're probably ideally suited to careers in banking, finance, accountancy, also consultancy, management consultancy. A number of our students go into actuarial work. There is a separate actuarial science degree at LSE. It's not essential to do a degree that is focused if you want ultimately to become an actuary. Most actuaries are maths graduates. A large number of our students go into postgraduate studies, master's level, then maybe PhD. And because it's a joint program, some of them go on to economics-based graduate studies, some to maths-based graduate studies, some to other things like finance and computing. So that's our own students. They all do pretty well. They don't all do these things. Some of them do some very odd things. One of them became a magazine editor, moved into journalism. One of them is now a designer of bespoke fashion jewellery. One of them is a minister of the Church of England. I mean, people do all sorts of things. So my message that I want you to take home, and I'll keep repeating this, is it's important to study something that you enjoy. Because remember, what you want is you want a good degree from a good university, so you get a better degree if you really are studying something that you enjoy. You do better in subjects that you like. If you're studying something you'll enjoy, you'll have a more interesting time at university. It'll be more intellectually satisfying, more intellectually stimulating, more fun. 3 years is a long time to study something boring, especially, you know, because you've got the rest of your life to be bored. So, you know, you're in university, do something you like. Do something you really enjoy, because ultimately you'll do better that way. The real reason you should study a maths-based degree isn't employability. It's because you love mathematics. If you don't love mathematics, it's probably not a good idea to do a maths degree, because guess what? There's a lot of maths. So you've really got to love it, because you've got to ultimately want to do well in it, and that means you've got to really, really enjoy it. Okay? So those are sort of broad reasons why you might want to study mathematics. You like it. No, you don't like it. You love it. You're good at it. It's fun and interesting and intellectually satisfying. And it probably leads to a good job as well. Ultimately. Okay. I want to say a little bit about maths at university, just to draw a contrast between maths at school and college, because it's slightly different in nature. There's an emphasis on being a bit more precise about ideas, so formalizing ideas in mathematics in a proper logical way. There's an emphasis on understanding rather than calculating or problem solving. So I'll give you some examples of that later. But what we want to do in university maths is try to explain why maths works and to help students understand that. There's also, in any maths degree, going to be some applications. Now, as I mentioned, we wouldn't find at LSE applications involving mechanics or the more physical applied mathematics, because we don't have that emphasis. But we would, and I'll give you a list of courses later, see some applications to economics and finance and to some extent computing and things like that. So I'll show you something about that later. But as I say, you know, what it's ultimately about is about inculcating within students a way of reasoning analytically, abstractly. And that's the key so-called transferable skill that a maths degree gives you that employers want to pick up on, as I mentioned a moment ago. That here's a maths graduate, that means that they know how to solve problems and think analytically. So it's, in particular in the first aspect, it's a bit different perhaps from what you would be doing A-level or equivalent. There's more emphasis on not just, well, how do we do this, but why do we do that? Why does it work? Okay, so that's general ideas about maths at university. Let me focus in on maths at the LSE. So we've got two maths-based programs in the maths department. There's also some other programs you might want to look at in other departments. There's a business maths and stats degree in statistics. There's stochastic and statistics with finance and statistics. There's mathematical economics and econometrics in the economics department. That degree is primarily focused on econometrics, so it's very different from this degree. We've got two degrees that we run, roughly speaking, and it is approximate because it depends on which options students choose in the final year. One of them is basically half maths and one is three quarters maths. But importantly, they've got exactly the same first year and exactly the same entrance procedures. So that's to say three things. You don't need to choose between which you ultimately really until the end of the first year, because they're identical in the first year, and transfer between the two is automatically easy. You don't have to, therefore, agonize too much over which of them to apply for if you wanted to apply for one of them. And importantly, you shouldn't apply for both. That would be wasting a choice on your UCAS form, because for these degrees, the applicants are treated as one set of applicants. Essentially, for the purposes of admissions, we treat this as one program, so there's no point in making two applications. Okay? So think of it as one program that branches off a little bit after the first year. So you come here, you do the first year. Let's say you're on the maths and economics degree, and you say, you know what? I enjoy economics, but I love mathematics. I want to do more maths. Then you go to the department and you say, I want to transfer to the maths with economics from the beginning of the second year. We say, no problem. Okay? Or vice versa. So maths with economics to maths and economics and vice versa is easy. Transfer to other degrees within LSE is much more problematic. But between those two degrees, it's easy. The programs, both of them, combine maths with economics and also other social sciences. Now, we work carefully with the colleagues in economics to offer the sorts of economics courses that mesh well with the maths that you're doing. So we have some more mathematical economics courses that we suggest for you. Likewise, we teach the sorts of mathematics that would be useful in economics. Now, we teach two sorts of maths courses, really, in this degree. We do standard university-level maths courses that any university-level maths program would have to have. Classical standard stuff that's got to be in any maths degree. We also teach a range of options with focus on applications of maths to subjects like economics and finance and other social sciences. Beside that, you also similarly on the economics side will do standard economics courses that you would find in any economics degree, along with a range of options in economics, many of which are quite mathematically focused. Okay, so I'll show you later some of the courses that both sides of this partnership offer. As I said, it's a joint degree with economics, and all joint degrees with economics are administered by the partner department. So we administer this degree, which means that the students who are doing these degrees, in a sense, are belonging to our department. They're looked after by staff in our department. All the administration is through our department. Our department is quite small. It's growing and has grown rapidly, but it's still quite small by LSE standards, about 20 full-time staff. And it's small and, we think, friendly. We, as well as teaching, of course, to students on these specialist programs, we do a lot of teaching to students on many degree programs across the school. I think, in fact, most of the first-year students at LSE, I think about 70% of them will do a maths course. Because if they're doing a degree in economics, then, of course, they've got to do some maths alongside that. You know, many, many subjects need maths. So we do a lot of teaching to students in other departments, in addition to these specialist students. Our department does a lot of research, particularly on areas of maths that are relevant to the social sciences. Without going into too much detail, the sort of three broad strands of the research that goes on: discrete maths and algorithms, so that's sort of where my interests lie. How do we how do we develop techniques, for example, for analyzing large data sets? How do we efficiently solve problems using computers? Then there's financial mathematics. It's a group that's grown in recent years. And game theory. So you can see that these are sort of have a social science focus. Game theory is, sort of, in broad terms, the study of conflict. We work on the mathematics of that. Financial mathematics is about things such as how do you price various financial products. And that uses some very high-level maths. So that's the sort of thing that we're involved in. And that's, to some extent, reflected in our teaching. Certainly it's reflected in our teaching at postgraduate level, but even at undergraduate level, it infuses and comes into what we do and what our focus is. So let me tell you about the two programs. So, again, to emphasize, they've got the same first year, so think of it as one program that branches off after the beginning of the second year. Now, the first year looks like this. You do a course called Mathematical Methods. I'll say a little bit about each of these courses in turn. You do a course called Introduction to Economics, Elementary Statistical Theory, and Introduction to Abstract Mathematics. Now, you might say, well, hang on, I thought you said that one of these degrees was 50% economics. How come I'm only doing one economics course in the first year? Well, it's because you need statistics and maths under your belt before you can do advanced economics. So that's why you only do an introductory course in the first year. So Mathematical Methods, MA100, is a course that continues on from A-level. So it's a continuation of the maths you're already familiar with, calculus, algebra, that sort of thing. The emphases in that course are, as the name suggests, on methods and techniques. But there's also some emphasis on not just these are the methods, these are the techniques, these are how to use them, but an explanation of why they actually work. So we're trying to get across some of the theoretical underpinnings as to why the techniques work. So there's two sides, really, or two elements to that course. One of them is calculus, which you'll be familiar with. So we do a little bit on one-variable calculus, which is the stuff that you will be familiar with from A-level. But the main focus is what's called multivariate calculus, which is looking at functions that depend on not just one input, but on several inputs. And that's very important in economics. Very seldom in economics do things depend on just one other thing. They tend to depend on a number of other factors. So whenever you have something, a quantity you're trying to study or model, that depends on a number of other factors, the technique, the appropriate technique, is that of multivariable calculus. So in some ways, that's an extension of the calculus that you do at A level. We also look at differential equations, and we have some applications of calculus to economics. So that's the calculus side of that course. What may be slightly less familiar, may not do very much of this in your A-levels or equivalent, is linear algebra. So this is about matrices and linear equations. And the new stuff that you won't be familiar with, I guess, is vector spaces and linear transformations. Two things I want to emphasize about this. First of all, it is a continuation of what you've done before, but most of it's new. We don't spend a lot of time going over stuff that we can assume that we know, because all the students coming into this program will have an A star in A-level maths or the equivalent. So we hit the ground running. Okay. So we learn lots of new stuff in the first year. You won't be bored, put it that way. You'll be suitably challenged with this course, even though it's a continuation of what you've done before. Introduction to economics. Okay. The clue's in the title, introduction. You don't need to have studied economics before. And even if you have, I think the approach taken in this course will be sufficiently distinct from the approach taken in your previous study, because it will be more mathematical, more analytical, right from the word go. So if you have done economics before, there'll be enough here to interest you that will be new. If you haven't done any economics before, don't panic. It doesn't mean you won't be able to handle this course or that students who've done economics will be at a tremendous advantage. That's not the case. It's interesting to note that for this degree, we don't require economics A-level, and also for the LSE economics degree, they don't require economics A-level. The only thing that both degrees require is maths. So this is introductory, no previous studies needed. It's university level, so it's different from any economics you might have studied or be studying. It's more analytical. And there's two parts to it, micro and macro. So microeconomics, there's the sort of list of subjects that you would encounter in the microeconomics and macro. Now, that might mean nothing to you at the moment, but that's okay. It doesn't need to, okay? Statistical theory, elementary statistical theory. Again, introductory. Perhaps I'm a little bit misleading that name. Elementary doesn't mean easy. It means introduction. So it's a university level course. So if you've done some statistics as part of your level or other studies, that's fine. But you don't need to have. It'll be absolutely fine if you haven't. And you do the standard sort of statistical techniques. Probability, inference, hypothesis testing, those sorts of things. Again, if that doesn't mean anything to you at the moment, don't worry. So all of these courses have enough in them to keep you interested. The course that I have taught, and which I think may be new to most students in flavour, is abstract mathematics. It's a first course in proper pure mathematics, by which I mean it's a really formal approach to mathematical ideas. So the emphasis is on not calculating or solving problems, but understanding concepts and proving theorems, proving results. Okay, so, you know, why are there infinitely many prime numbers? Prove it. Okay, that's a classic example. Why is it that every number can be written in basically one way as a product of prime numbers? Okay. What do we mean by a limit of a function or a sequence? Now, intuitively, you may know that you're comfortable with these concepts, but this course actually says, well, hang on, do you really know what you mean by saying that a sequence of numbers has limit zero? Let's think about that, work it out properly, and then, you know, move on. So it's a theoretical course. It's quite different in nature from A-level, but it's really ultimately what maths is all about. Okay, it's often said that a good lecture, a good maths lecture, would involve a theorem, a joke, and an audience that can distinguish between the two. Well, I don't have a theorem, but I do have a joke. So this is related to MA103 abstract mathematics, okay? See if you can figure this out. Did you get it? Okay, so one of the things we study in MA103, abstract maths, is a little bit of logic. Okay. So this is what we do in abstract maths. We do logic, sets, functions, proof by induction, divisibility, prime numbers, all that sort of stuff. real numbers, complex numbers, sequences, limits, continuity, and group theory. You might have seen smatterings of these in your studies so far, but for most students, most of this is new, and the approach taken, the more formal approach, is new. But it's an interesting and, I hope, stimulating course. So after the first year, you can then do the maths and degree or the maths with degree. Each of them combines further maths with economics. And possibly other subjects too, such as finance or subjects from a completely different department at the LSE. In each of the degrees, you do another mathematical methods course that continues on from the first year one. You do some more economics and you do some more abstract mathematics. You have some options and flexibility in the within the degree, mainly in the third year. In the third year, you do more maths or economics. You could do up to two finance courses. This is with the AND degree. You could do a course from another department, or you could do something completely different by arrangement. But basically, in the maths and economics degree, you do two economics courses in the second year, two maths courses, and by a course, I could mean two half-unit courses. Okay, but you spend half your time on maths, half on economics in year two. In the third year, you can spend half your time on each, or you can give it more of a steer towards economics or more of a steer towards mathematics. So that's why it's only approximately 50%. In the with degree, the key difference is in the second year, you do one economics module, not two, and the rest of the courses are maths courses. In the third year, you have to do one economics module, but you can't do another one if you want to. So they're not so different. There's flexibility within each program to move it in either direction. Examples of the sort of maths courses, I'm just going to throw you some names here. A lot of these are half-unit courses, so there's quite a lot of them. So half-unit courses taught over one term rather than two. Further maths, real analysis, algebra, number theory, discrete maths, optimization, differential, complex analysis. Okay, so you can see that there's a mixture of courses that you would find in any maths degree, such as analysis, algebra, discrete mathematics, probability. Okay, those would be in any maths degree. But then in addition to that, there's some applications-focused topics that have more of an LSE, more of an economics finance flavor, game theory. Even the probability course is called Probability for Finance. There's a course in the maths of valuation in finance. But there's some fairly abstract courses that have nothing to do with applications, optimization of function spaces, complex analysis. Okay, I don't know if this means much to you, but basically what I'm saying here is that if you looked at any other maths degree in a university, a maths-based degree, you'd see many of these there. You wouldn't necessarily see game theory. You wouldn't necessarily see maths of finance, and in their place you'd see things like relativity, fluid mechanics. Okay, that's the difference. Economics courses, these are mainly full unit courses. That's why there's fewer of them. They're bigger. Micro, econometrics, which is statistics applied to economics. Economic theory, behavioral economics, very trendy at the moment. Industrial, monetary, political economics. And there's others. Okay, there's lots of economics courses. But that's just to give you an idea. Entrance into the degrees. So the normal requirement, and it's not something I want to get too much into, is A star AA with the A star in maths. You don't need economics. If you've got further maths, that's good. It's not a deal breaker if you don't. Okay. So that's really all I want to say about entrance. The key thing is that just having this doesn't mean you get an offer. The application is, of course, assessed, as you'll find out if you go to the applications talk. There's no interviews here. The assessment of the application is based on the UCAS form, predicted grades, previous grades, school statement, and your personal statement. And as you would I'm not giving away any inside information here, but as you would expect, a personal statement for these degrees would be one that would indicate an interest in both mathematics and economics. That's a fairly obvious thing to say, but worth saying. Okay. Okay. So I don't want to get into too much into selection procedure. That's not my job here today. I'm here to talk about how wonderful mathematics is. Right. So what did we like to be here at LSE? Again, you can find out much more about this later, and one of our current students is going to join us shortly and help answer questions. Typically, there's four courses per year, typically. It's not absolutely true. Four courses per year, whereby a course, you mean something that extends over the whole academic year. Some of the times, courses are split into, or courses are half-unit courses that run in one term. For each course, you typically spend 2 hours of lectures and 1 hour of class. Class is small group teaching where you go through assignments and have discussions. For our first year courses, many of them we have additional sessions. So for statistics, there are extra help sessions and extra example sessions. For mathematical methods, there are extra example sessions. For abstract mathematics, there are extra example sessions. So we sometimes, or we do, put on extra sessions for some of the first year courses. But second and third year typically has this model. Okay, so that's not an awful lot of formal teaching, but of course that's typical of university. Most of the time is to be used doing the assessments, the assignments, doing the reading, thinking through the lecture notes, and just generally thinking, basically. Assessment here largely is fairly old-fashioned. With one exam a year per course at the end of the year. Some courses have elements of project work or assessed coursework, particularly the sort of third year courses, but it's unusual. More often than not, there's one exam at the end of the year. Okay. In addition, in the first year and in the second year, so in the second half of the first year, from January to March, and then in the first part of the second year, from October to December, students do something called LSE 100. This is a distinctive feature of the LSE programs, all LSE programs. This is compulsory for all LSE students, and the idea is to enable students to develop wider skills and also to sort of get people to think outside their disciplinary box, if you like. So students of maths-based degrees, along with students of history and law and everything else, will explore together some of the big sort of social science policy issues of the day. Climate change, culture, the financial crisis. I mean, this list may even be, I mean, it changes every year. Depends what is currently, you know, the important topics in the world. So every student at LSE does that. It's been running now for a couple of years, and I think it's going pretty well. Some of our students worry about it when they come in because they think, oh gosh, I'm going to have to write essays, aren't I? I haven't done that for years. But actually, when they get into it, they find it quite interesting, and they realize that it's a useful thing to have, not just intellectually, but also, you know, it gives you some extra key skills. You're not just doing maths and economics, you're doing group work in this course, you're doing writing in this course, you're developing other skills which will be useful to you in later life. And it's also taking advantage of the fact that now LSE is an absolute intellectual powerhouse on the social sciences. So we have really top-notch experts in their field talking about the issues of the day and how they analyze them. Not just, you know, but, you know, what techniques do we use to analyze these problems? And, of course, many of those techniques are statistical and mathematical. So that's the LSE 100 course. As I say, it's about deepening and broadening your intellectual horizons, but it's also about giving you some extra skills that you can ultimately sell to an employer if you want to be crude about it. It is assessed, but the mark that you get for the assessment, it doesn't count towards your final degree classification. It just goes on your transcript. So it's not part of your official final degree classification calculation. Okay. Other academic matters. Students will also get assigned somebody called an academic advisor, who is a member of the academic staff, who's basically there to help them and look after them. Meet them regularly, discuss their progress, discuss any issues they're having with the courses, help them decide which courses they're going to choose for the next year, generally give them academic guidance and their first contact for pastoral or personal support. LSE has a whole range of student support services. Academic advisors are helpful people as a first contact, but they ultimately may refer you on to somebody who knows more about, you know, for example, student finance or something like that. But they're basically your point of contact with the system in a way. So it's a friendly face, gets to know you during your time here, will ultimately be writing reference letters for you, and we'll just be keeping an eye on your progress and helping you through. Okay? And for these degrees, because they're housed in the maths department, the academic advisors will be from the maths department. Okay? So they used to be called tutors, but this name was misleading because tutors suggests that they teach. So, you know, you wouldn't, as a member of the maths department, a student wouldn't come to me and say, I'm having trouble with my economics course, can you help me? Because the answer would be, well, probably not. So, you know, there's other ways you can get help on specific courses. You go to the people responsible for those. You go to the class teachers who have many office hours available to see students on a one-to-one drop-in basis. The academic advisor, as we now call them, is a more accurate terminology than tutor. They're there to advise and to help and guide. They're not responsible for teaching you necessarily in the courses. Okay. Okay, and as I say, LSE has many other support agencies, health, welfare, careers, and indeed the Students' Union has its own support services too. So I hope that's given you a flavour of what it'd be like to be a student here, but you could find out much, much more about that from other sources here today. I was going to be joined, I think, by a current student. Is Mirella here?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. So Mirella is one of our current students. You are in third year?
Third year.
Yeah, okay. So what I'd like to just do, once I finish this, is just we can jointly take questions. It's always good to have a real live student with us who can tell you what really it is like. Okay, so life as a student. Well, you'll find out about this today. LSE has pretty much all the student organizations and facilities you would expect. Doesn't have all the facilities you might expect in the university, right? We don't have any green fields. There's no, you know, playing fields on site, obviously, because we're an urban central London location. But we've rapidly and substantially improved the facilities in this year, actually, with the opening of the new student center, which is this strange-looking building that you might have bumped into. So we do have pretty good facilities now. What's special about the place is it's small, fewer than about 9,000 students in total. It's international. Taken as a whole, more than half, I think, of the students are not just from outside the UK, but from outside Europe. There's the other thing I should mention is what's unusual about the demographics of this place is that about half the students, or slightly more than half the students, are postgraduate students and half are undergraduates. That's quite different from many universities. There's many public activities going on here. You know, president of this, prime minister of that will be passing through London and drop by for an evening lecture. There's all sorts of interesting things going on. There's a buzz about the place. And we've got excellent library and IT facilities. And it's in London, which is interesting, if expensive, but interesting. And there's many other institutes nearby that you can make full use of, you know, other universities, museums, you name it. So it's an exciting, buzzy place to be for 3 years of your life. And even if you're... So I guess what I'm trying to say is this. If you want to go to a sort of campus-based university where you want lots of green space and everything is there and it's all self-contained, then this isn't the place for you. But if you want to go to a place where you're sort of mixed up with students from all sorts of other departments and you're bumping into people doing different subjects and there's a real sort of intellectual buzz about a place, then think about LSE. It's slightly different from other university experiences. Well, it's very different from other university experiences. But it's interesting, it's exciting. Would you agree? Correct answer. Okay, so just let me finish by saying, again, the main point I want to make is I hope you're interested in these degrees. Well, we are. Actually, we're expanding the numbers of students on these degrees. LSE is expanding slightly some of its degree programs. It's expanding these programs slightly from this year. Don't apply for both degrees. There's no point. And we will treat all the applications for both degrees as one pool of applications and assess them on the merits. So it doesn't matter really which of the two you apply for. Apply to the one that you think currently suits you best, but be aware that if you change your mind during the course of the first year, that's not a problem at all. Okay? Thank you. And now we'll take some questions. So, let's have some questions.
Yeah, well, it's the first time to be here. Usually I'm in one of those seats attending Introduction in Abstract Mathematics first year course, or later on second, third year. I've been listening to Professor Martin Anthony's presentation, and I made several notes. I was not Skyping or Facebooking, no. I was making some notes on some information I want to stress a bit from my experience as a student. I would start talking on the academic part because this is what I focused most on in my studies. But I have some knowledge, absolutely, to take questions from other sides of the live student here as well. I would start stressing that the academic advisor should be the person that knows you well and maybe the best here at LSE. A key feature of the MAPS department is that your academic advisor will surely be a lecturer or a professor you might meet during your studies over the 3 years. It is not for sure a master or a PhD student. It is always a doctor, a professor, or a lecturer. It's somebody with a lot of academic experience and a lot of experience in supervising other students as well in previous years. Still on the subject of the staff members, you will receive a lot of help in terms of help sessions, extra help sessions on the courses you have, plus office hours. You can drop by if you announce by email you have a question on a particular subject. You drop by. People are willing to take your questions. You will never, ever be left without an answer to your problem. Something else, I don't know if you mentioned, you have weekly homework.
I failed to mention that, yes. We keep you busy.
Yeah, you are busy. You have weekly homework in any mathematics, statistics, finance, or economics course. As a student here, I have four problem sets due every week. Not all of them are compulsory, but it is always about how much effort you put in it. It is what you give is what you get. If you imagine you can postpone doing a homework once, twice, three times, it will be your personal decision. There will be no... I think you will be called in an office if you keep doing this for four times in a row, yes. There might be some issues on your progress and the feedback you receive at the end of each term, but it's very much a mature, serious student decision you make. A last bit would be the lecture size and the class size groups. In a lecture, as a first-year student, you might be in a course of 100, 120 students. This is the case for introduction in pure mathematics course, introduction in abstract mathematics. But in your third year, you'll find yourself in a lecture with other 12, 15 students because they are very specialized. This is a case for a course I take, probability for finance. There are only 15 students taking that course. And I like it because you have a very bond relationship with your other peers, and you can organize group studies in the library on those issues. But the class size, no matter what year you are in, is always 15 students. And in the maths department case, your class teacher might be the lecturer, the professor himself, and not a master's or a postgraduate student. Okay. Oh, that's it.
Okay. That's very helpful. Yeah, what you said about, I should have mentioned lecture sizes and class sizes. So in the first year in particular, if you're doing a course like Introduction to Economics, you can imagine there's many, many students doing that course. So the lecture is huge. It's hundreds of students. But the class groups are 15 in size. And for the maths courses, it's about 200-ish for abstract maths, about 500 for maths methods. But for those courses, although they're huge lecture groups, for the classes, they're 15 in size, and we group them according to degree program. So you'd be with other students on these degree programs in those small group classes. So that's to try and help them get to know each other and also to sort of give it more of a focus. So that was a very good point, yeah. Questions? Yeah.
You said that you have a course assessment once a year.
Yeah.
For any particular given course.
That's typically the case.
Are there any other measures to make sure that you are on the right track?
Yeah. That's
right.
Well, the weekly assignments that were mentioned, they are assessed every week. They're graded, they're marked, and the students are given their marks and feedback. You know, you did this right, you did that wrong. And then in the class, you would be discussing how you should have approached the problems. So that's formative feedback, and it's formative assessment. So the marks don't count in the end for the exam. They're just to help you as a student or me as a teacher know that progress is being made. Okay? So, yeah, you get a lot of each week your progress is assessed in that sense, but not examined. Right? So the exam is at the end of the year. All these assessments that are throughout the year are part of the learning process, not part of the exam process. Very important to understand that. So what that means is that it's okay for students to make mistakes in those assignments, because the marks only count as a way of feedback, not as a way of assessment. Okay.
Are there any open book exams?
I think there might be for some subjects, but we don't.
Not
in our area, no.
Not in our department.
No. Yes. How many students do we take? It's going up, so it was, I can't remember, but it's typically been about 70, 80 a year, and it's going to go up by around 20. So it's 90 to 100 on these programs jointly. Yeah?
This question might stretch the boundaries of the subject matter of the lecture a little bit. You mentioned earlier on about the personal statement that displaying an interest in mathematics and economics is something that might be watched out for.
Mm.
I mean, the average 17-year-old who's going through the school will be aware of mathematics and will have been studying mathematics for their 13, 14 years in school. But economics is something that is there. We all know it exists, and it obviously impacts upon our lives.
Yeah.
It's not something that, unless you have studied it,
no, I understand.
It's terribly how would one display an interest in economics? I mean, in a personal statement that one hasn't studied it as a GCSE or A-level subject?
Well, I don't think selectors would be looking for any sort of expertise, but just a sort of
an awareness
and a sort of indication that, you know, I love mathematics, but I'm very interested in applying it to economics because I'm interested in what's going on in the world. It's just that sort of thing. I mean, if a statement for these degrees didn't mention economics at all, it would look a bit odd. So it's hard to give a direct, detailed answer to that because You're right. It depends whether students studied economics before or not, but some awareness of the fact that this is not just a straight maths degree is important. It's got to be the right degree for them. That's the other thing. Yeah. Yes, behind you.
It can be about a very easy reading in economics that the students have. It can be some fan book in economics, something for uninitiated students.
Beginner's guide.
Yeah. Freakonomics or something. Yeah. Okay.
Are there preferred modules for the further maths A level or ones that will prepare you any better?
No.
So you could do almost no stats and a load of mechanics. And
yeah. That's right. Yeah. No preferred modules. Yes, sir.
You described the sort of difference between maths and economics and math or with economics mm-hmm. as sort of 50-75%.
Yeah.
If you did, and obviously there's some flexibility with the,
yeah.
the specifics you take, but if you, and this is a little unfair because clearly you're a mathematician, but I mean, if you took economics and then steered towards the
yeah.
courses, how would you sort of compare that on a 50-75%?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
No, I do, yes. A number of students on the BSc Economics, the straight economics degree, would do exactly the same first year that I've described to you, because they would choose to do the abstract maths. The other three they have to do anyway. So there's not a lot of difference between first year economics and first year in these programs. So they could do an identical first year. In the second year, they could choose to do the further maths course, and in the third year, they could do extra maths modules. I've had students, even in some of my very advanced maths courses, who are economics students. So they can do quite a lot of maths as part of the economics program. Not as much, but quite a lot.
You could sort of do an economics with mathematics type thing.
Yes.
So about 25%.
You could do economics with maths, exactly. In fact, probably that's what most of them would do. Yeah. Okay. Question, right. Gentleman here, yes. Yeah.
But is that the same
group
for 18
months?
So would we have to recap that?
No, okay. So there's a brief bit of overlap perhaps at the beginning, but quite quickly you're on to brand new stuff. Yeah. And it's done a slightly different way as well. There's not too much overlap at all.